When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. I am the great and powerful mystery.
And I'm Jay Clone. Whoa, 96. And you got the black lung?
Well, kind of. I got chicken lung.
Oh, chicken lung.
Yeah. No, I'm sick.
Oh.
So this is going to be a fun episode.
A fun week.
Fun week. Yeah, because recording backwards. No, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. This is an amazing place to be.
Where fun happens.
No front of house stuff this week because I didn't do the scripts until about 11 o'clock last night.
Fair week.
Yep. Fair week was insane. So I'm just playing catch up with fair. Mm. By the time you hear this, make sure you guys... Ketchup.
Ketchup. Underrated condiment.
Cannot wait to see you guys in a couple weeks.
Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
The Jamboree.
October 5th. Come see us. Come talk with us.
Come have the events. We got all kinds of fun stuff. We're going to have some live music from some local and non-local bands.
That's right.
We got all kinds of crazy fun games that are going to happen. Some really cool people are showing up.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm hoping to get a picture with Tony and Wild Bill at the same time.
We can make that happen.
I think I can.
I don't see why we wouldn't.
Well, just because both will be busy.
Ah.
It's more that. Yeah, the after party, though.
We know how to gather people.
I want Tony on my shoulders, and I want to be on Wild Bill's shoulders.
It could be done. I think he can do
it. He's the only person I know that could probably do that, because he carries me around with ease, and I'm a big man.
Yeah. Wild Bill's a strong man.
I'm not saying you couldn't pick me up, but...
I could pick you up. I don't know how long I could hold you.
But when he was carrying me around the hotel...
You felt...
And I was like, woo!
You felt safe.
Yeah, I felt cared for.
Right, yeah.
Cradled.
That's what it is.
For a 300-pound man, that's rare.
Right. It's hard.
It's hard. No, so cannot wait for the Jamboree. It's going to be so much fun. We got so many cool, amazing friends coming out and, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. More surprises every second. Everything from Linda Sigmund, one of the last surviving Mothman eyewitnesses, that Wild Bill is going to be there.
Right, yeah.
It's
going to be a Jamboree.
It's going to be a Jamboree. That'll be the slogan.
8 Ohio. Oh, we should record a song.
Gonna be. Well, we now know several professional musicians and singers.
It's gonna be a jamboree for you and me.
No, we cannot wait. It's gonna be so much fun. I'm ready for the after party already.
The after party is a party.
Yeah, it's at Norita Lanes.
The bowling alley.
I will not name which family member. One of my family members just this past week finally understood why it was called Norita Lanes.
Ah. It took some time, but now they got it.
Yes. Just saying.
North of Ada.
Yeah.
Very simple.
Yep. Yes, it is. Now, okay, so this is mostly going to be from Adam Benedict's work. You know, he does the Pine Barrens Institute. We have all of his amazing books from, Monsters in Print, Ghost in Print, Oddities in Print are the three real popular ones. But, no, so he had a nice profile of the monsters of Lake Michigan.
Mm.
So more historical accounts than than the modern accounts.
Yeah.
So he's got some more. We're going to pull from some of that. We're going to talk about some of the what could be living in Lake Michigan and some of the monsters that we know live in Lake Michigan.
Okay.
Lake Michigan itself is a very odd body of water when you talk about the Great Lakes as a whole.
It's probably the most unique out of all of the five.
And it's killed the most people.
Ooh.
By a lot.
So the most deadly?
Yeah. Me and Emily have personally fished on wrecks out there.
Oh, wonderful.
So where there's corpses, 400 feet below you.
You're jigging for fish around corpses?
Yeah.
All right, that's fair enough.
Well, bones, it's cold down there, so. But the mammoth, everything from the mammoth kill circle down there, like, Lake Michigan holds a lot of secrets.
Is it the deepest of the Great Lakes?
Okay, now, arguments. I do not think so.
But it's one of them.
It has an average greater depth than all the Great Lakes.
Okay.
But I think Superior has the deepest hole.
Okay. Does it hold the most water?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It is the biggest of the Great Lakes.
Gotcha. Okay.
The average deepest, too. Like, by that, I mean, like, when we're talking average, I think it's like 450 to 500 feet.
That's crazy, though. It's just crazy.
I remember when we were fishing it, and we were, like, by the shore, and we were going out, and I'm looking at the fish finder, and we live on Erie.
Right.
Which
not that,
is,
I mean.
Which is the shallowest of the Great Lakes.
Right. It's crazy to think, Lake Erie's not that big.
Lake Erie is the least impressive of the Great Lakes.
But it's still crazy.
It's all an ocean. It's a sea.
Yeah. All the Great Lakes are very, very impressive if you've never seen them.
But when you live in the Great Lakes area.
Yeah.
And you've been on, I think I've been on every one of them now.
I've just about been, I think.
Maybe not Huron. I don't think I've been on Huron. I've been near Huron.
Huron's the one above Erie, right?
Yeah. Huron's off to that side. Superior's on top.
Oh, Superior's on top. Okay. You know, I don't think I've been on Huron either.
It's just normally when you go to Superior or if you're near that area because of the fishing, it's just a little better. It's Superior and Superior. No, so the Great Lakes as a whole are impressive. I cannot remember. It's like 3 or 4% of all the fresh water on Earth is in the Great Lakes or something like that.
Okay.
It's some big number.
I take it back. I have been on Lake Huron. That's where I used to go fishing all the time was Huron. I got that and Superior mixed up.
So it goes without saying the North American Great Lakes are five of the most awe-inspiring bodies of water on the planet. Believed to be start forming near the end of the last glacial period, it took roughly 14,000 years, roughly 14,000 years ago. Lakes are the result of altering periods of glacial advancement and retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at Erie being so shallow, it's the lowest of them.
Right.
You look at Michigan and Superior being the deepest, it's because that's the most gouging has happened.
Okay.
But as far as we talk about lakes and bodies of water, they're very young.
Okay.
Which is odd.
Especially as giant they are.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're giant.
It's
like mountains, right? Mountains, younger mountains are taller than older mountains. They erode down, same thing, they start filling in.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, so during the thousands of years of constant glacial movement and tectonic plate shifts, which is the Mid-Continental Rift, which runs right under Findlay right by us.
Oh, wonderful.
Deep depressions known as basins were carved out of solid ground, only ended up covering an expanse of over 750 miles from west to east. And when the earth began to warm and once prominent glaciers began to melt, the five major basins were created and filled with a combination of over six... Okay. Ready for this number?
Yep.
6 quintillion U.S. gallons of meltwater.
Is that like how much our U.S. debt is?
No, it's a little bigger than the debt.
Oh, okay. Pretty close, though.
So, and yes, if you read, I read that correctly, quadtillion.
I don't think I've ever heard that number yet.
This is 15 zeros.
Oh, that's a lot.
It doesn't, I have it written down out to, here too. It doesn't look real.
Yeah, I know. 15 zeros.
It looks like a misprint.
Yeah. Quintillion.
Help you wrap your head around. Just imagine 16 quadrillion, quadrillion gallons of milk stacked up.
Yeah, sure. That helps. Yeah. No, I can't even picture that.
Scientists who study the lake have pondered the historical data believed to be a geological idea of each lake reached its peak. The estimate for both Lake Erie and Lake Huron were filled first, because they're farthest away from the glaciers.
Okay.
So that makes the most sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That they were, as the glaciers retreated for the last melt, that's who'd be, you know, first.
Mm-hmm.
Erie began filling around 10,000 years ago, and Huron only began filling about 7,000 years ago. The remaining three lakes, being Ontario, Michigan, and Superior, were believed to be filled only roughly 3,000 to 4,000 years ago.
Hmm.
And while those numbers seem high, the Great Lakes are considered the young, or to be very young, in the estimated age of only 10,000 years old.
Hmm.
So when we start talking about these lake monsters and stuff like that, we're not talking about some of these lakes. When we talked about some of the ones in Africa, South America, and stuff like that, where they're tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years old.
Even Loch Ness, right?
Yeah, Loch Ness is really, really
right.
old.
Right.
These lakes are really young.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, but we'll talk about their biology inside the lakes. They filled fast with monsters.
If there's a niche.
It was an open highway.
Right, exactly.
Near the end of their formation, not long before they settled into their final shape, of which they are now today, the Five Lakes began drawing large groups of early man to the young shores. Archaeologists with the Great Lakes region, as well as other groups of scientists and historians, bridged prior to melting the glaciers around 10,000 years. Or they ventured over here, the Bering Land Bridge, about 10,000, 11,000 years ago, went to plant their deep roots in the Great Lake region. This Native American tribes were once present throughout the entire region. In addition, there was also evidence to suggest that deep within the few of the Great Lakes, Huron in particular, there are ancient sites which indicate the presence of unknown groups of people who once flourished within the region before disappearing. But that's a mystery for another time. That is maybe the mound building culture.
Okay.
For everybody that's not, maybe not know at home, and this is pure speculation and opinion, the mounds of North America seemed to be in a much older culture that were then used as sacred sites.
Re-inhabited
as sacred sites by other groups after.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of those in Huron and Michigan.
Mounds?
Structures.
Okay.
That are way older.
Gotcha.
I think they...
Oh, you mean like under the water?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I did not know that.
So when you look at it, like, I think the Mammoth Kill Circle is 112,000 years old in Michigan.
Now, that's crazy. How do they know that, though?
Just get, like, you know, we talked about that.
Okay.
Guessing.
A speculative guess. Yeah.
But you got to have mammoths for a Mammoth Kill Circle.
Well, yeah, of course.
So whenever there was no mammoths, it would make sense to build a giant kill circle. I do think that's what that was for. I don't think it's a Stonehenge, just because it looks identical to, like, the ones they use for deer and elk. Just mm-hmm. big.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me that, you know, if you want to hunt mammoth and mastodons.
Well, what if the deer and elk were bigger? Megafauna. Moose.
Yeah.
It's a moose kill
circle.
I don't think
you get how big it actually is.
No, I don't. I have no
idea. I think a moose could slide in between all the pillars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Maybe if it didn't have its giant antler, you know.
But let's say it is just a mammoth kill circle, you know, or a bit off topic, but not, but... How the heck did 100,000 years they build, move gigantic pillars and stones like that?
Well, the mammoths.
You're right.
The mammoths they were trying to hunt.
Yes, exactly. So if they could domesticate them, they really need to build a circle to kill them?
Yes.
I don't know about that.
Bos Taurus and Bos Indicus.
I don't know what they were using. That's just craziness. It's underwater now.
Sound technology.
That's what
white
some people
bell
say.
White bellbirds.
There we go. Now, that would make more sense.
You shake a white bellbird at a rock and it floats.
They have them on the end of a stick, and they pointed at it.
Well, what was the movie with a badger on a stick? Or maybe it was a video game. It was a weapon from, like, caveman times.
Yeah,
like,
badger on a stick.
Yeah, because you'd hit the badger on the ground and get it mad, and then hit it, then put it to somebody.
It's a good idea. That.
As the group settled further north, they found into the structured tribes with the region's specific language, customs, and beliefs. And relationships with the Great Lakes only grew stronger. This is like one of the cradles of some of the great Native American tribes. Okay. Was the Great Lake region. Hmm. Not only for it was the winters here are extremely harsh, but there also was plenty of bounty here.
Oh yeah.
So it was made it very worth it. Between fish and wildlife, mm-hmm. and even foraging and stuff like that, the Great Lake regions had everything from native medicines to food year round.
Right, yeah.
Even with the harsh winters, whether it was salmon runs, sturgeon, deer, elk, moose, bison, there was always food.
Right.
The Great Lakes were the cradle of North America.
That's awesome.
But with the people coming here, they also brought legends, folklore of, and it's, you know, this is an opinion thing. Do you, whether they brought the legends and folklore with them or they were just talking about what they were seeing, I kind of walk the line of both.
Okay.
You see something and you apply the old folklore to the new thing.
Gotcha.
Like they did with Loch Nessie and the Altamahaha sea serpent.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was literally Scottish immigrants coming in.
That came here to...
And they're like, oh, well, they
Georgia,
have
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, yeah, they have a Nessie here too.
Right, yeah.
But yeah. But they talk about in the Lake of Michigan, the great horned serpents.
Like in Ohio?
Mm. Legends involving the great horned serpents vary from tribe to tribe. But when all is said and done, they're pretty much all describing the roughly the same animal. A creature is said to resemble a huge dragon or snake covered in very large, thick scales, a prominent horn or horns on its forehead, and long teeth. While these beasts could occasionally be found on land, they're most often found lurking within the dark waters of both lakes and rivers. They are oftentimes viewed as being supernatural or halfway supernatural in nature, with the ability to control weather, shapeshift, turn invisible, and bestow magical abilities on those lucky enough to defeat them in battle.
Oh, wow. So is that the ancient folklore they're applying to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
My opinion.
Yes.
While great horned serpents could be found within almost any body of water, the most powerful ones called the Great Lakes their home. Also, the Ohio River was one of the, like, so when you talk, there was kind of like six great horned serpents.
Okay.
In like Algonquin legend and some of these other tribes' legends.
Six different types?
No, there's six fathers or grandmothers.
Oh,
of
gotcha.
The species.
Okay.
And each one ran a lake or the Ohio River.
Okay.
Which the Mississippi should be called the Ohio.
Yeah, it should be the Ohio River.
Yes. Anyways.
The whole way down.
So that's kind of what they viewed it as, is that there was you could find great horned serpents in little bodies of water, in little rivers, mm-hmm. anywhere. Most of the time, they reflect the size of the body they're in.
Okay.
So they're in a small offshoot lake of Michigan.
They're going to be small.
It can be smaller.
Like a...
Still powerful, still great beast, but... Each of the giant bodies of water were ran by a giant one.
Right. Okay. Like, what kind of fish, like, they grow relative to the size of their tank they're kept in?
It's ammonia, but yeah.
It's ammonia based?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So basically, that's how Bass Pro gets their fish to be absolutely disgusting looking with
huge
being fat.
Oh.
Because they have special ammonia filters. So
the ammonia,
yeah, the ammonia is the trigger for stop growing.
Okay.
It means we're getting too big for our environment.
Understood.
So if you take out the ammonia, that trigger is not happening. So they just get obese.
Yes. I've seen them.
They get disgusting. But yeah, their horns and scales are believed to possess great power and widely sought after for brave enough to go looking for these beasts. While great horned serpents could be found within almost any body of water, like I said, the most powerful ones called the Great Lakes and the Ohio River, their home. The Great Lakes have long been storied with historical involving the monstrous residents since the time humans first started painting on the cliffsides and telling each other these stories. As mentioned above, the Native American legends and myths of the great horned serpents lurking beneath the surface of these lakes, looking for a quick meal to pluck anyone off the shore and devour them back in their underwater caves.
Mm.
Along with these sea serpents, lakes are also said to be home to underwater panthers. I'm going to try to say the Native American names for these creatures. The Massipawa.
Sounded good.
Thunderbirds, which
nailed that one.
Well, yeah, that's an easy one. But they're, so they think the portals to kind of the underworld, it's not like what you think of, like, it's not hell, right?
Right, right.
When we say the underworld, it's a different, kind of a different dimension.
I'm almost thinking like
so water panthers and thunderbirds don't get along, but okay. They're both kind of said to hang around these portals. like guardians in a way. Depends on the tribe, right? Depends on a lot of the tribe.
So Thunderbirds are like hanging around portals to the underworld-ish?
Yeah.
Like that's what you're saying?
Guards. Essentially.
Okay. Where the heck are these portals?
Well, these ones are in the lake.
Okay.
They're in the lake.
Yeah.
The great fish, which is Musa Namak, which we talked about a little bit with like the great sturgeon mother or the great salmon mother.
Right.
Every group of fish, every species is said to have its originator, including the semi-mythical beast, like I said, with the horned serpents. Like they have the six that are the originators.
Okay.
So even salmon and the sturgeon have their great fish.
Gotcha.
Which are many times bigger and most of the time have powers of some kind. And even the little people, the Minahasas.
Okay.
The Minahasas, With so many legends, these creatures said to lurking within these waters is easily to get lost and cluttered sometimes. Especially true from start at the beginning of the monster stories that originated from European settlers. They got into the mix as well. So that's what we talk about now. The Europeans are coming in and mixing their folklores in with the existing folklores, plus seeing creatures.
Right, yeah.
Like I said, if you haven't been, like Lake Michigan, I think we went out 6 miles and we could have been 100 miles out.
Yeah, you can't see nothing.
I felt more comfortable. So we deep sea fishing in Florida.
Okay.
I felt more comfortable in the ocean than I did on Lake Michigan.
Why is that?
I don't know. I never understood, because we never really got more than 100 or 120 feet deep in the ocean.
Yeah.
You don't, like a continental shelf's way, way far away, like 60 miles out or something like that.
Right.
In Lake Michigan, you are 100 feet from shore and in hundreds of feet of water.
You're sitting over a big hole.
And you can watch the steps down, 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 and it just keeps, I don't know, the water is different. It's so cold and dark. Even on the brightest day being on Lake Michigan, it's like the water is like the deepest blue.
Yeah.
And in Florida, it was always green. I don't know. It's just, there's just that feeling, right? And that's important for when you get on these things and these stories that come out, is the actual presence of the body of water itself.
It can be scary.
Yeah. So when settlers from Europe started showing up the Great Lakes region in the late 1600s and early 1700s, it wasn't long till stories of monstrous beasts started creeping through the surrounding colonies and settlements. While many of these stories have been lost to history, quite a few have held on and even adapted and evolved into modern times. An example is Bessie.
South Bay Bessie.
Yes. Gwanda Shandartha of Lake Ontario and the Lake Huron Great Snake. But not are the two creatures in Lake Superior. There's also Pressy and the lesser known cave monster, which will all get their own episodes one day. Pressy has some cool videos where it looks like two seals moving around with each other.
Oh, really?
Which are not in Lake Huron.
You're right, exactly.
So that's very interesting. And then the cave monster. All these lakes, besides Erie,
you know,
because of reasons.
You're just making me want to go fishing so bad right now.
I know.
Like itching so bad.
But have giant cave systems inside of them.
Oh, gosh, that's even worse. Or like to make the urge to go fishing.
But with all these lake monsters floating around in the five Great Lakes, it's odd that no modern stories are associated with Lake Michigan, the second largest of the five. Searchers made online and well deep dives, past and present books, but there's not very many stories to spark of the monsters in Lake Michigan. But as we learned many times before, it comes with lake monsters. Sometimes you have to go deep to find the evidence for them. So we're going to talk about some of the ancient, not ancient, but really old accounts of these guys. On August 3rd, 1867, a newspaper by the name of the Daily Ohio Statesman. Man, newspapers used to have
cool names.
They used to have names, right?
Now they don't even exist.
Reprinted a story from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which spoke of two men having an encounter with what only could be described as a giant whale within the lake. The first man, Captain McBride, spoke of how while crossing the lake in the early morning, he caught sight of a great fish, which resembled that of a whale. He claimed the beast made significant noise and even blew water into the air like a puff from a blowhole.
Interesting.
So let me stop there for just a second before I continue. He had been on the ocean. He had seen whales.
Right. He knew what he was talking about.
He was a captain. So a lot of these ships were going in and out of the Great Lakes into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, it's...
What is that? St. John's Pass or something?
I don't remember.
Okay. St. John... Yeah, no, that's Florida.
St. John's River.
It's Florida.
Yeah.
I don't remember the one
in,
access
in
to,
Canada.
Yeah.
Canada, United States area, like
wherever. Yeah.
When he made his way towards the creature, it blew once more, then sunk swiftly below the surface. The second man, a tugboat captain named Consul, claimed that the early hours of that day, he seen what he could only describe as a great fish that resembled a whale situated near the mouth of one of the rivers that drain into the lake. He stated that the monstrous fish moved very slow along the confluence and appeared to devour whatever objects it encountered, like opening and closing its mouth. As he steered his boat in the direction of the fish, the unknown creature let out a loud, low, moaning sound, blew a blast of water into the air, and sunk beneath the surface. Captain Consul sailed in the area in hopes to see the creature surface, but it stayed out of sight and remembered of his time at the lake.
Hmm.
So, two accounts, two different captains.
Seen
in 1867.
Okay.
Saying they seen what they could describe as a whale. The one was opening and closing its massive mouth, feeding on whatever it was eating.
Hmm.
Thoughts so far?
A whale or?
So no long neck, no, you know, just right. A giant body.
No, yeah, just a fish. She described it as a fish, you know? You know, whale I know is not a fish, but.
But yeah, but one solid object.
Yes.
No not long a neck, serpent. No big flippers, right. No serpent.
No dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that'd disappoint you.
No, they come later.
Okay. I thought I'd get a look from you. Just
We're going to talk about the T-Rex that showed up in the middle of the lake.
Oh, right.
Trying to tread water.
Yeah.
I think they could swim, but Lake Michigan's a hard one to cross, and it is cold.
And you're not walking across the bottom of that one, probably.
Additional evidence within the... It's not eerie. Yeah.
Right.
Additional evidence within the article of the existence of the creature in the Lake Michigan points to the discovery of a large fish that washed up on the banks of the lake, which appeared to be bitten in half by a large unknown creature. Assume the culprit was somehow partly due to the shark family, to the appearance of the bite marks, and the size of the fish made its meal. So it was a sturgeon that had been like bit in half.
Oh, okay.
Essentially.
Dang.
And the end of this stating that those who had seen the beast described it as being well over 16 feet long and a large head and capturous jaws, just large jaws.
Hmm.
It made the point that it was bigger than any sturgeon, which had been apparently fully capable of destroying a boat with ease. So yeah, sturgeon are in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying this thing is 16 foot long, big jaws, a dead sturgeon washed up on the shore, bit in half.
The sturgeon was 16 feet?
No. The creature was 16 feet.
Making sure.
Okay. It was like a 7 foot sturgeon that had been bitten in half. And they're like, well, that's not a bike.
Do bull sharks get that big?
Interesting idea. We'll come back later to that.
Oh, okay. Let's revisit that one later.
It's almost like that is the big size for bull sharks.
Oh, I didn't know that. I always thought they were just 6-7 feet at max.
Nope, 16 feet.
Oh, interesting. That's
and
weird.
When they get 16 feet, they get very, very, very rotund.
Round, like a whale, perhaps.
They look like a big whale,
but
with a big, wide head.
Do they spray water out?
No, I don't know what that's from. Carpet sharks do.
So do what about like manatees? Do they do like a...
They don't... No, their nose is on the front of them.
But do they like flip water with their tail?
Yeah, they'll do all kinds of goofy stuff.
What's that video? It's like a... This guy's in the lake and all the waves just start splashing everywhere. And they're like, what creatures are they? Were those manatees?
Maybe. I don't know which one you're talking about. They can be. Manatees can kind of book it when they're scared.
Like when one's scared and it splashed away, they all moved. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, that's probably manatees.
So I wonder what if it's something like that, though? You just see in like a foggy distance early morning, you see that that tail splash. You think it's like a spray?
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a blowhole spray.
Right, yeah.
These captains, once again, have seen whales, and they probably just are assuming that that's what that is.
Right, yeah.
Didn't have to be. 13 days later, on August 16th of 1867, yep, the Manicore Pilot, which is a different newspaper, shared the article from the Chicago Tribune, in which speaks about the sighting that took place on the 5th. The story states in the statement, the Lake Michigan is inhabited by a vast monster, part fish, part serpent. No longer admits its doubt. The article goes on to speak about the sighting made by a man named Jos Milka? Jos Milka? I'm going to guess it's Russian. And it ventured out to Victory Park in Hayden Park, Chicago. Mr. Muka claimed that the monster was witnessed about a mile and a half from shore, and it appeared to be roughly five times the length of his own boat, around 40 feet. So his boat is, if it's five times the length, he's an 8-foot boat.
Right. Yep, that makes sense.
A mile and a half into Lake Michigan.
That's a small little boat.
Braver than me. In his own boat. So it was bluish black in color and got lighter near the head and the tail, almost appearing to turn gray or white. The head was triangular in shape and looked like that of a seal in presence. It possessed two large eyes that were thick as a barrel. And it was as thick as a barrel as it moved through the water like a snake. While on the surface, the witness claimed to be able to see the back, which appeared to be rough and plated like that of a sturgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So not bull shark-esque.
No, not at all. More sturgeon-y-esque, but with the triangular-shaped head?
Yeah. They if you look from the top, they have a very triangle head.
Yeah.
Bull sharks have very tiny eyes, and they're towards the bottom of they're by the mouth, towards the underside.
Okay.
So any of these stories that talk about eyes immediately make me go away from bull sharks.
Right.
Because it just doesn't bull shark. You got to be on a bull shark to see an eye, doesn't and they're fit, not big. Yeah,
does
sturgeon
not.
Have massive eyes?
Okay,
I told you the stories of them peeking in. Like, you look in the ice, like ice fishing, you just see an eye sometimes staring back at you the whole, and it's a sturgeon. Just like, what's happening up there?
Curious.
They are very curious. The monster then makes a third appearance in print almost 2 weeks later on August 29th, when it appeared on the Elk Advocate in Pennsylvania. The East Coast paper spoke of how the city dwellers in both Milwaukee and Chicago had been agitated by the appearance of a strange creature in Lake Michigan. The monster, in which was being described as being anywhere from 20 to 50 feet long, was said to have stated making a regular appearance from the working on ships within the lake. The majority of sightings described the article made by the crews of both the tugboat, the Crawford, and the propeller ship, the Skylark. Both crews described seeing the creature as a serpentine in appearance and looked as thick as a barrel. The creature would then keep mostly to itself of its surface, thrashing the water and foaming it with its tail before ducking down quickly below the surface as the vessels approached. So it didn't, so far it hasn't attacked nobody.
Right.
And if you get near it, it panics.
It's
the articles end the statement with how it only mattered of time before the search vessels were going to attempt to capture the monster for museum display. Human nature. Kill it and put it in the museum.
Yeah, we need it. Put it on the wall.
August was a particularly busy time for the newly discovered monster in Lake Michigan. It had been sighted in both Milwaukee and Chicago multiple times. Why do you think most of these sightings... Now, the Native Americans talked about some of the monsters in the lake, in Lake Michigan specifically. But why do you think it took so long for us to get lake monsters in Michigan in the end of the 1800s?
Well, I bet...
For constant sightings.
I'm wondering if... We just weren't as active on the lake yet. We didn't have the vessels to navigate as often.
100% right.
Oh, all right. Look at me.
Well, because most of our vessels had to stay close to shore.
Right, yeah. Because it's a deep and dangerous lake.
It, like I said, it has sank many of seagoing ships.
Yeah. Dang. So, yeah.
Ships have literally crossed the Atlantic Ocean and then sank in Lake Michigan.
Nah, that's just craziness. That's crazy talk.
It gets violent.
Yeah.
And it gets mean.
Mm.
It will kill you.
Like, oh, never mind.
What? Like a woman? Know. Is that what you're going to say?
No, I was just going to say, like, people in Michigan, but it's just certain areas.
Before I continue, I think it's time for an ad. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Hey, we're down here at Mel's Hole and Justin? Justin? Where'd you go?
Help! I'm falling down the hole!
You fell down Mel's hole?
Yes, I keep falling. And I think I'm going to be falling for a really, really long time.
Oh, no. How long till I... You have enough time for me to get a rescue crew?
I think I do, but I'm really hungry, and I found a dead tumor seal as I was falling. But it looks absolutely disgusting. Do you have anything to help?
I think I have just the thing. Here. Let me toss down a couple of bottles of Flavors of the Forest Bigfoot Breath.
Really, really chuck them so they catch up.
Here comes one. And two.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to eat this tumor seal now with Flavors of the Forest. Where could the other people get this amazing product to cook their own tumor seal?
You can get this wonderful, amazing, tasty product at flavorsforest.com/corn. Add it to anything and it will make your food taste delicious.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I love that one every time. It makes me laugh.
Makes me hungry.
Oh,
for Tumor Seal.
So it was cited, like it said, both in Milwaukee and Chicago multiple times. Experts first reported stayed mostly constant with witness descriptions. The only thing that appeared to change throughout of each telling was the size of the creature. But as we know with fishermen, it gets larger and larger.
That's like you telling your fishing stories.
Except I have pictures for most of them.
Most of them.
But one don't I have a picture for?
No, it's not most of that. Like, oh, yeah, you know, pulling out 40-inch pikes.
They're there.
Yeah, exactly. They're there.
But
oh, no, it's funny.
But this, as well as known, is a staple near every fish story in record. Apparently, wanting to get a record number of newspaper mentions under its belt in 1867, the monster of the lake made a more appearance at the start of the sleeve of the year. Only this time, though, it wouldn't be a retelling of a sighting or a close encounter. This time it was special as it made its first appearance in a long verse poem written by Sheep P. Smith of Wisconsin. The poem would appear of the Manitowoc Pilot of September 13, 1867. It was titled, What Is It? The Sea Serpent on a Rampage. And thanks to the wanderers of the modern digital age. So after making this apparent in the poetic verse, the monster of Lake Michigan seemed to be taking some much-needed time off. So I had a big gap.
Went on vacation?
For about 18 years.
You know where it went to, right? Kansas. Sinkhole Sam.
It would be about the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Except it didn't really look like Sam.
Oh, darn it.
Whatsoever.
Well, you know, when you go from one body to another, you
change your complete appearance.
Yeah, everything about you.
So a brief mention of the sighting showed up in the Portland Daily Press of July 24th of 1885. And it goes like this. A water monster. I have tried to do the voice of like the old timey. What is that?
Water monster, eh?
Yeah.
We saw him out there on the lake.
The water monster is reported to have been disappointing itself in the waters near Lake Michigan. According to the description, the manner of appearance in the public, it must have been our esteemed and valued friend, the sea serpent. He has been reported by many visitors, but did not prevent him from being in the same time in Lake Michigan. No well-regulated sea serpent ever lacks the ability to appear in at least four different places at one time. So this comes from that literally at the exact same time, there were sea serpents being seen off the Atlantic coast.
Okay.
So it's just saying that it's...
Like coincidental or...
Yeah, it could be. I mean, there was always kind of a sea serpent here or there on the Atlantic coast.
Yeah.
But it's just saying that it's interesting that there's a bunch of them seen at the exact same day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was more of a mockery of the Lake Michigan ones, saying that, you know, this kind of journalism going around at the time was just kind of picking at them, saying that it's interesting, not interesting that they're seeing him in Michigan, Lake Michigan.
They implying that
they're copying
right.
People on the East Coast, yes. In the ocean.
Hmm.
In July of 1897, multiple papers began to share a story of a sighting made by a man named John Dowry that took place roughly 33 miles north of Chicago. The witness, a commissioner of public works and a well-known contractor with the city at the time, was said to be on one of the beaches along the lake with his family around dusk when suddenly two men in bathing suits came running towards him shouting about a commotion in the lake. Downey, thinking it might have been a ship involved in some sort of emergency, ran with the two men to the spot where the incident was said to be taking place. Once there, Downey claims to see a huge something gliding through the water over 200 feet away. The size was estimated being well over 30 feet long. And he could see it was carried a large black neck and a head above the water the entire time.
The whole time. That's interesting.
As it's power swimming.
Right.
It's carrying a large black neck and head above the water. Also seen was large fins protruding from the back when these easily stood over 4 feet tall, somewhat representing a picket fence post. So like the kind of the general shape.
Okay. Okay.
The unknown thing was said to have been diving under the surface and reappearing several feet away, almost as if it was being chased by something or playing with something in the water. Mr. Downey and the two unnamed swimmers claimed to have watched creature for well over 20 minutes before they finally lost sight of it into the darkness of the approaching night. During this time, Mr. Downey stated that the creature made an approach of the shore, approached the shore at over an 18-inch high. Like the waves being hit in the shore.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And a school of large fish approached the water's edge as if they were frightened or trying to escape the monster. Also noting that the day prior of the sighting of the unknown creature, a carcass, now listen to what I'm about to say.
Okay.
A carcass of a large mastiff dog had been laying on the beach exposed to all the sea. But on that day of the sighting took place, something large apparently crawled out of the lake, judging by the marks in the sand, and dragged the dead dog back into the lake. It is said that there was no trace of the body found, and the marks described... Now, I'm sorry, I'm trying not to laugh. The marks in the dirt that were discovered were clear that a cow had gotten onto the beach and took the carcass.
Oh, yeah, man, that happens. Cows definitely scavenge dog carcasses.
Everybody... The and newspapers just dragged them away. The police said... It was a cow had gotten onto the beach and dragged the dead mastiff, the carcass, away.
Well, maybe it was a stellar sea cow. Maybe they weren't wrong.
I believe that more.
Maybe they weren't wrong. They just left the sea cow part out.
It just makes me laugh that, like, a cow.
And they all like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. A cow.
That does add up. But yeah, cows, they don't eat carcasses, do they?
Yeah, they will. Most herbivores will take a bone or meat. Okay. Or they'll eat baby birds and stuff. Like cows will eat baby chicks.
Okay, well, will they take like a carcass?
I've never seen a cow carry a carcass off.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. My next part. Okay, so they will eat meat, but will they carry it off into the sea?
No, I've never seen... Cows can swim. They're not very great at it, but they can.
But that's where they eat, right? When they...
Yes, when they take a dead giant dog's carcass off, they often go into the Great Lake.
You know, I think I could be an investigative cop or something.
Yeah, it's normally a janitor that gets asked this question in the local high school.
I think it was a cow. Cow, you say?
It was a weather balloon moving 100 miles an hour sideways. Right.
Yeah. That we built, you know, on Science Club last week. I know this. I've seen it.
I love janitors, but that's not who you go to get a biology report from.
And then post it in the paper.
After the Downey sighting, the stories involving the lake monster spread across the word of mouth very quickly, and they also did through the papers. Stories about the beast once demanded multiple paragraphs soon became nothing more than a blurb. So on July 7th of 1904, the Bridgeton Pioneer wrote on page 4, "It's reported that Lake Monster, or the Lake Michigan, has a sea serpent 20 feet long, green in color with yellow stripes. Amount the characters and the beverages necessary to provide the reptile have not been stated." Basically, how drunk do you have to be to see the monster?
Right, yeah.
So, there's, again, just kind of putting jokes out there.
Okay.
Another one in 1908 stated, "Four women of impeccable validity say that they saw a sea serpent in Lake Michigan recently. Somebody must have been spiking their ice cream sodas."
So again.
Yeah, saying that you have to be drunk to see these things.
Well, what if they're onto something? What if you have to be a little inebriated to see, like, past the veil through the different dimensions?
There you go. Yeah, I've been Listen, if that was true, I'd have seen a lot more stuff in my life.
Me too, I think. Oh, for sure, me too.
I think I've only seen stuff sober.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I've never been inebriated in my lifetime. I've never hallucinated or seen things, ever.
And if you could hallucinate from drinking, I would have.
Right, yeah. I agree.
You can't. Like, unless you're drinking, what is it, absinthe?
Right, yeah, that has stuff in it.
That has extra chemicals in it to make you see things.
Just don't do any of it, in my recommendation.
No, it's bad for you. Data just take place in Chicago of July 5th. An article from 1911 focuses on the man that refers to Colonel Axel Green, a well-known squatter and fisherman in the city. It is told on the evening of July 4th, Independence Day, Green climbed aboard a boat and made his way onto the lake along with others and found the relief of the sweltering July heat. Apparently finding some escape, the boat dropped anchor and the group spent the night on the open water. The next morning, Green was the first to wake up and he stood on the stretch and rubbed the sleep out of his eyes. He spotted something strange moving in the water roughly a mile away from the boat. Assuming that it was still asleep, Green rubbed his eyes again, a bit much harder the second time. And after this vision came back to focus, the strange thing was still in the water. It was clear to see it was the shape of a massive serpent. Realizing that others needed to see this, Colonel Green ran quickly around, waking up everybody. When all the passengers woke up, Green pointed their gaze in the direction of the large serpent. They were able to witness the incredible sight. At some point, the monster was easily 100 feet long, and other passengers wouldn't corroborate this story.
They would not corroborate?
No, they would.
They would, okay.
Which they did, although none were willing to provide their names.
Okay.
So when they got to shore, they'd be like, yeah, no, we've seen a 100-foot-long serpent.
Well, what's your name then?
Nope.
Bye.
But Green did not stop with the basic retelling. He went on to state that the sailor, for many years prior to coming to Chicago, his professional been shanghaied at least once. You know what shanghaied is?
On the water, right?
Yeah, so what would happen is they would get you drunk and you'd wake up on a ship and your job, you had a choice to work or to be thrown into the ocean.
Oh, okay.
So shanghaied. They would steal you to work on a ship.
I did not know that. Okay.
So you'd been shanghaied at least once. The Shanghai tunnels was literally to steal sailors.
Hmm.
They built tunnels underneath the city to grab people out of bars and throw them onto, these people would grab people out of bars, run them down these tunnels, and sell them to people that were leaving on ships.
I'm glad I live in now times, because I would have been shanghaied.
Yeah, I've shanghaied you.
That would have happened.
I've stopped you from being shanghaied before.
I guess, but I don't remember.
Well, yeah, because when you're being shanghaied, you're inebriated.
Usually don't know, yeah.
But yeah, so Green kept adding to the story.
Okay.
And he gave himself moniker of Colonel.
Oh, he's not a real Colonel?
As far as we can tell. But he kept telling and telling and telling. In 1942 pamphlet regarding sea serpents in Wisconsin, Charles E. Brown, former curator of the Museum of the State Historical Society and member of the Wisconsin Archaeological Society, recounted an incident that took place sometime in the early 1900s, although the exact date is unknown. The write-up goes to claim that a group of fishermen working off the shores of John's Island all caught sight of a large creature moving through the waters of the lake. A large head that was held high above the water with a thick neck, an overall appearance of a ferocious-looking monster. Not even a week later, some young men were sailing in the Milwaukee Bay, spotted what they thought to be a large barrel floating not far from the boat. As they brought the vessel closer, they realized originally that they thought was a barrel was actually a wide, flat head of a large serpent-like animal. Before they could even react, the head sunk down and disappeared quickly into the murky water, like it was being pulled backwards.
It's a very similar story. It was like the past two or three.
The young man quickly retreated, and then they told everybody about the event they had witnessed.
Yeah.
The third and final sighting, which Brown described in this pamphlet, took place in the Milwaukee River below the Michigan Street Bridge. Early one morning, a man was walking on the bridge when he was said to have caught sight of a large body moving through the water passing underneath the bridge. The body was described as appearing to be thick overall with a grayish green in color. It quickly submerged before additional features could be witnessed. So he just described a wide, large body.
Okay.
He could never seen a head, flip or his tail, nothing like that.
Yeah.
It was just kind of going against the river, up underneath the bridge, and then dived. After the Milwaukee sighting, a report of the monster became less frequent, and apparently became so rare that some people claimed to have seen it. Reports gave more attention to what kind of beverage the witness was drinking than the actual creature.
Again, what's with this? Maybe it was absinthe. Maybe that's what they're getting at this whole time.
What's the drink they always make you drink in Chicago?
What do you mean?
Look up the bad liquor Chicago's famous for. I had it one time.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
Literally the worst thing ever.
What do you mean they make you drink it?
Because it's their drink.
Like the Chicago drink?
Yeah. Oh. But it's literally the worst garbage ever made. It's like dumpster juice poured into a bottle. And it's a big joke in Chicago. Like, oh, you got to have a shot of this.
Right, yeah. Let's see here.
Will you do that while I keep reading?
Swedish wormwood liqueur?
No.
Oh, okay. Malort?
Malort.
Malort. That is it. And it's a Swedish wormwood liqueur. Malort, as a beverage, doesn't sound terribly off-putting. It's not unlike absinthe, though.
Talking to the mic.
Oh, sorry. Reading and talking. But yeah, that's it. Malort.
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 If you ever get offered Malort, don't.
Oh, okay.
It's a joke. Ugh. It tastes like whatever liquid tires are made of.
Now, I like the smell of tires.
No, like I'm talking about the process to make a tire.
Oh, okay.
It's like paper, right? You ever been around a paper plant?
Maybe. I don't
know. They're the worst smelling thing ever.
Really?
Don't stink. Paper don't stink. They're doing something bad in the middle.
Ugh. What about the dog food plant? Ugh.
Now, the paper smells like burnt death.
Interesting.
It's not great.
Some chemical.
After the Milwaukee sighting, like I said, more reports of these monsters started going down. They were, like I said, more focused on what drink the people were drinking. On September 1st of 1934, roughly 23 years after the original Green sighting, a story which appeared in the Bismuth Tribune of North Dakota featured the front page story, "The Famous Serpent, Again Seen in the Lake, Chicago, September 1st. Fact or fancy, the famous sea serpent has bobbed in the lake once again. We are about 4 miles from shore, and Captain G.N. Shufflebeam of the SS Theodore Roosevelt, Friday night, when Donald Sterley was looked out and saw it, ordered the two floodmen follow the creature, and it wriggled and twisted around the great fasting ship, and it kept the sight for about 5 minutes. The passenger on deck cried out, 'What is it? What is it?' But the captain nor the foreman knew what it was. They flipped its tail, and the creature was about 60 foot long. It stated towards the Benton Harbor, Michigan." And that's about that.
Okay.
So the ship, seeing a creature swimming in the lake, and they started chasing it a little bit, had spotlights on it, and it was definitely running from it. Like, it did not want to be ran over by the ship.
The creature did not enjoy this moment. Yeah.
And do you know ships often hit whales out in the open ocean? They're not supposed to. They're supposed to stay away from whale migration routes.
Okay.
But literally, a cargo ship just brought a rice whale carcass, a fresh carcass, into New York a couple weeks ago.
What, drag it in?
They hit it. And most ships hit him on, and then they stopped to let him fall off.
Because he didn't stop, did he?
He didn't need to know he hit it.
Oh. I do not know.
Because the ships are massive. They don't know. Like,
okay. Until
somebody goes and looks at the bow and sees a 100-foot-long whale land across it.
Hey, well, we brought this guy with us. Oops.
Yeah, they got in a lot of trouble.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, because it must have already been dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Floated right to the top. And bam.
My last little thing before we get into what could be going on here is we already covered it in corn sharks.
Classic.
But the Lake Michigan shark attack.
Right, yep.
Just real, like, real fast, just that. But there was a body of a shark found in Lake Michigan. It was about 10-pound body, 2-foot-5-inch long shark. Gil Sharkman and Carl Luskowitz.
The guy's name is Sharkman.
Shurkin.
Okay.
Were coho salmon fishing, and they ended up catching the dead body of a little baby shark.
They caught a dead body?
Like, they seen it floating, and they went over and netted it. They thought it was a baby sturgeon.
Gotcha.
And it was a little shark. Hmm. It was a bull shark.
Yep.
There are controversies around this. Some people say it was a thrift store's, like, preserved shark that
somebody
had thrown into the lake.
Oh, okay.
I will just say for this story, basically nobody's ever been able to prove it or disprove it.
Why would someone buy a shark and then just throw it in the lake?
I know.
Unless it was these two guys that bought it and threw it in, then...
No, it was a whole different guy. Let me see. I don't even know. I don't have his name here. It was a whole different guy claiming that he was the one that threw it into the lake, the hoax people.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And happened to find it. You know how fast a corpse is going to disappear into the lake?
Lake Michigan? I mean, it's like a needle in a haystack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great prank. Yeah. Yeah, great prank.
But the famous the shark attack and all that from the young boy. In 2014, a Chicago man took a photo of what he believes to be a shark swimming around the lake. I've looked at the photo. It does look like a shark in Lake Michigan.
Okay. I mean, we know they're there, right? Now?
Lake Michigan, no.
Okay.
We know they've been within 11 miles of Lake Michigan.
Right, yeah. Shoot, that's close enough.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
2017, a woman in Milwaukee took a video of almost the same thing. And it literally looks like a shark fin moving in and out of the coast. And it is Lake Michigan.
And they only say we've just never caught one there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they're very rare visitors.
Right, yeah.
On July 13th of 2019, another video was captured of an unknown something moving in the water next to the Carverex South Pier Lighthouse in Michigan during a powerful storm. And this video looks like a giant eel. I've shown you this video before.
Yep, I've seen this. I know exactly. Where
it literally crawls over the pier.
Yep.
On the lighthouse because whatever storm's going on, it's one of those Lake Michigan famous storms.
Mm-hmm.
I've been near Lake Michigan for one of these storms. It is not hard to imagine how a giant ship could just
get
disappear.
Up. Yeah.
And if one of these monsters are too close to it, like too close to the shallows, they will get battered like the whales that end up in the Amazon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Giant animals are not above the weather.
If you haven't seen the whale in the Amazon, just go ahead and Google that.
Yeah, it literally is because of, I think it was, what was it? A
water spout?
A tsunami.
Oh,
but not a tsunami, it was a typhoon.
Oh, a typhoon, okay.
Yeah, a typhoon, a tropical storm down there had picked up a whale and threw it.
That's insane.
So what could this be? Do you have any ideas?
Well, there's a lot of sea serpent stories.
Yeah, there's several different
types
of things.
Yeah, some of them I do think a bull shark, for sure. Big one.
So let's talk about that one first.
That big one, that 16-footer that we talked about earlier?
So bull sharks do get 16 feet long, and that's kind of where they top out.
Yeah, see, I did not know that.
And the two types of bull sharks that end up in freshwater environments are babies and the adult females.
Okay.
So that would be your giants.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest ones of the species are always, first bull sharks are adult females. They go inland to give birth because it's a safer environment and a more prey-rich environment for their offspring. And then the babies hang out in freshwater environments.
Okay.
Talked about in corn sharks, there were, records of 2,300 or 2,400 miles upriver, which puts them just south of Chicago. So it's just 11 more miles.
Okay.
What I mean? It's not like...
They're pretty much there.
It's not like a couple hundred more miles.
Right, yeah. No, they're pretty much there.
And then there's the other way getting in, if they're following cargo ships in.
From the ocean
side. So there's several ways that
Bull
sharks could end up in Lake Michigan. Now, would they want to stay there? No. It is the absolute, probably worst habitat for them. It is cold and deep. And it has a vast, like a biological dead zone. So Lake Michigan has pretty much no shoreline life.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it drops to 600 feet.
Immediately. So there's not much of a habitat.
Yeah,
there's
step habitat.
Right. Okay.
So it is pelagically active. Which bull sharks can feed in.
What's that mean?
Open water. That's open middle of the column.
Pelagic?
Pelagic.
Okay.
So when we talk about pelagic fish, think of like whale sharks, great whites.
The guys floating in the top, not really
mess with the shoreline very much as adults. You know, great whites will go in for seals and stuff like that, but whale sharks, they stay open ocean
all the time.
Life.
Yep.
So a sort of serrat fish, that kind of stuff. So king salmon are pelagic. When your walleye is not, they can be pelagic. They will hang out in those environments.
Right.
They'll also be in shallow waters.
They'll be in that 10 to 12 foot range, 20 to 15 foot.
Yeah. Which is shallow.
Right.
We're talking about 600 feet.
Yeah, exactly.
So for bull sharks, I do think they can end up here.
Yeah.
I just do not think they're going to be there very long.
Yeah.
So when you have a sighting of one, whether it followed a ship in summer, and you look at almost all these sightings are going to be in the summer months.
Okay. So you're just
the other reason is because Lake Michigan freezes.
Right, yeah, in the winter. But you're specifically saying that no bull sharks are sticking around just in Lake Michigan, but the other Great Lakes, like Erie.
They have a better chance.
Right, yeah.
But still, I don't think they're going to survive a winter.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty rough.
It's now the Ohio River ones, they can go back south.
Right,
they
exactly. Can get out. Mm-hmm.
When you're in...
Stuck in a lake.
Lake.
Especially our lakes. Yeah. Like, it gets cold and...
It gets... Erie's the warmest of them.
But still...
It also freezes the hardest because it's the shallowest.
Shallowest, yeah. So, yeah. Six one way, half a dozen the other.
Yeah, doesn't really matter. Let's talk about the elephant in the room for these guys.
Okay.
Sturgeon.
Okay, yeah.
Lake... The Great Lakes already have a massive animal that lives in them.
Sturgeon.
Sturgeon. So, Lake Sturgeon... right now, our biggest ones are, you know, rivaling 6 feet, a little over. Okay. Historically speaking, they could easily get 8 feet, 7 feet, somewhere in there. So when a 7 or 8 foot sturgeon is going to be, you know, 300 to 600 pounds, if like the ones that have giant plates on the back and all that stuff. Now, these are lake sturgeon. These are fully freshwater sturgeon. They do not spend a part of their life in the ocean,
okay,
which is pretty weird for big sturgeon.
What, they go back and forth?
Most of them are androgynous.
Okay, they don't care.
So when we talk about white sturgeon and Atlantic sturgeon,
mm-hmm,
which get massive,
mm-hmm,
they most of the time will go in, they spend their adult life in the open ocean and only go into these freshwater environments to reproduce and give birth.
Okay.
They stay there for a period of time until they reach adulthood, then go into the ocean.
Gotcha, okay.
Like salmon.
Yeah.
So they don't die after giving birth most of the time.
Right.
Most of the time they
make go back out.
But they don't go nearly as far up. Most
as,
of the time.
As salmon do. Yeah.
So with this, my thought is there may be a chance that, first off, the white sturgeon are in the Pacific. They rival great white sharks in size, or they used to.
Okay.
Before we hunted them pretty much to, like, the big ones to extinction.
They were gone, yeah.
Like, big now is, like, 16 feet, which is a shadow of what they used to be.
That's crazy.
It used to be, like I said, some records show 20 to 23 feet. There's a couple scientists that put them all the way up to 27 to 28 feet long.
One heck of a fish to catch.
And outweighing great whites by a considerable tonnage.
Gosh. Be like pulling in a truck.
You wouldn't pull that in.
Yeah.
At 24 feet long.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that'd be an electric trawler to pull that in. You know, you're not rod and reeling that.
Oh, I could do
I don't care about the gear ratio you have.
Oh, I got all the ratios.
You've seen the guys that fight the 8 to 10 foot sturgeon.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's like reels are dying.
Where they're strapped in the dirt.
They're using Goliath grouper reels and they're still breaking.
Yeah, that's craziness.
Because most times sturgeon don't know they're hooked for a while.
They just keep
going. To fight. They're just swimming against the current.
Yeah.
You are moving the boat more than you're moving them.
Which I've had that before.
So... My thought is there's a chance that, so Atlantics get pretty big. They get 10, 12 feet long.
Okay.
So the guys on Lake Michigan know about Lake Sturgeon.
Okay.
So for them, you know, 7 feet big. So anything above that would be a different animal that was sturgeon-like. Even Bessie was described as being sturgeon-like with having the scutes and everything like that.
But she was just too big.
She was just too big. So there's a chance that there were a white sturgeon counterpart in the Atlantic, that somehow they work their way into the Great Lakes or into the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
They're serpentine. They have that giant whale-like body, but have the armor platings. And like the white sturgeon, they were first to go extinct. Like they once the white settlers got here, wiped them out very quickly without even knowing they were there.
Gotcha.
But the whites are very rare compared to other sturgeon species, even naturally occurring. Because of how big they get in their environment.
Do they have like the triangle-shaped head?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
The big triangle-shaped head, the giant eyes, very curious animals. So with the spouting of water,
yeah,
sturgeon, their gill slits, they'll actually slap them and shoot water above their heads if they're on the surface.
Uh-huh.
So when we played with the white sturgeon in the lab, that's what she would do a lot of the times, is shoot water above her head.
That's pretty cool.
So that could be the whale animal.
The whale spray, yeah. Yeah. So that accounts for some of them.
Yeah.
The last ones we've talked about, though...
Like I said, I think there's several different things.
Things going on.
Is massive. It's a
sea. Yeah, it's huge.
It's bigger than some seas.
Huge.
Next one for you is carp breeding.
Okay.
Have you ever witnessed this?
I have not.
So carp, common carp, they can get up to about 50 pounds in size. They're gold or silver in color. They can be a couple other colors, but it's mostly those colors. When they're spawning, they will run together in these tight, giant schools.
Okay.
And they will run up on the shore, and they'll run up together, and they will look like one massive thing, and they'll be splashing and foaming the water on top.
Mm, okay.
But they literally, I've seen it where they look like a giant serpent.
Like, because they're in train basically together.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, they're like piled and like swimming.
Okay.
So it literally trails off like a giant serpent. So some of the, one of the pictures actually, I think, was these guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of the famous pictures of them being near a pier, because they lay their eggs on things. So a lot of times they'll end by slamming into the shore, or they'll slam into a pier, and that's where they're actually depositing the eggs. So I kind of think that's what one of the famous pictures of the Lake Michigan sea serpent was.
Yeah, I've never seen such a sight in my life.
It's early spring. You got to be in the right spot, right time. Hmm. If you're on Kelly's Island in like the end of April,
yeah,
all day,
carp
is being slammed by hundreds of thousands of carp.
Wow. No, I would have never known.
And I know for a fact, I didn't do the gill netting survey on Lake Michigan, but a crew I knew was doing a gill netting survey, and they were complaining because they did it too early.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have hundreds, if not thousands, of giant carp. Like, at one time, you just see the gill net start moving.
Yeah, pulling
because it's getting slammed by these guys.
Yeah, hard, I bet. Yeah, because carp, I mean, they're strong fish.
Yeah, and then you have 500 of them hitting it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. Next one. Or what do you think of carp?
I mean, it's pretty interesting. I'd like to see
some of these early morning accounts.
Yeah.
And they just see like a serpent.
Something weird like that. I mean, I would have never guessed.
500 carp.
Yeah.
Which are already big fish. The other one I have is massive king salmon.
Okay.
That people do not realize how big kings get. I mean, they'll get 6 foot long. They'll form tight schools. And I've seen them in the river or where we've been fishing for them. And it literally looks like a giant black snake is swimming up the river.
Yeah.
And it's what it is a big school of these giant king salmon moving together.
Kind of swimming in formation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Moving up into a pocket together. So I think that could be some of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen a king salmon, so I don't even know. I don't know.
Oversized pike and muskie.
Okay.
Because some of the serpents were described as being green with yellow stripes. What's that sound like?
A pike.
A pike. Where they talked about this in Europe, of a third species of pike being hidden that went extinct, was just the giant pike. Or these stories of 10-foot long pike and stuff like that.
Dang.
May have actually been a species. And it wasn't Jeremy Wade. It was the same guy that did the beluga sturgeon DNA survey.
Okay.
Where they think they were bred out of extinction or bred into extinction.
Right, yep.
Where we killed enough of them.
And
they just had to breed with their nearest biological cousin.
The regular pikes.
And then, so now we have trophy-sized pike that are a shadow of what these giants could get.
It used to be.
So there's a thought that they used to exist in the Great Lakes region as well, where these giant pike, and we're talking the world record pike and the world record muskie, may have been one of these instead.
Hmm.
So the world record muskie, they just found the jawbone of. And I think, I can't remember, it was like 74 or 78 inches long. Because they first found this jawbone, and they thought it was a wolf.
Yeah, it's a fish.
Yeah, it was a fish. So there's a chance that their species was on. We're talking, most of these sightings are 1800s.
Yeah,
that they were on the edge of extinction because that's also the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
Started dumping all these chemicals. Esox, which is the family of pike and muskie, are very sensitive
to that
chemical
stuff influence.
So the bigger ones, the more species derivative ones, will go first. That's the first ones to go extinct. The more specialized you are.
Right.
Which would be, these are esox means ecosystem king.
Okay.
So where esox are generally, when they're in an environment, they're the king of that environment.
Okay.
So the Great Lakes version, because now there's muskie in them, but we kind of put the muskie there, or the muskie took hold in the early 19th century.
There was a niche available.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been these giants, and we could have been seeing the last of them, where you're seeing a 10-foot long pike or a 12-foot long pike.
Which would be awesome.
And it's, they're so wide
that
you're just describing that.
So
these guys are eating salmon. These guys are eating, these are the big predators out in the open water.
Well, yeah, I mean, a pike or a muskie.
Pike are grass predators.
Yeah.
Muskie are open water, normally pelagic predators and river predators.
Hmm.
So it may have had a pike coloring and acted like a giant muskie.
Right, yeah. I wonder, too, the lakes being relatively new, 10,000 years. When they were, or not 10,000, was it 10,000 or 100,000?
No, it's 10 to 10, 14.
10 to 14. Okay. Oh, yeah, it was the kill circle. But 10 to 14,000 years, with that relatively recent time period being formed, it could have been options like available for like niches for regular pike to grow supermassive because that was available.
It was available, yeah. So, species radiation.
So they might have done that, you know, back then, and then over time, those big species slowly started shrinking back down.
After the pollution started and everything like
that. Right, yeah.
No, it could very well easily be that.
So some of those phenotypes might still just be out there waiting to be unlocked.
Mm-hmm. And the Great Lakes have changed dramatically in the last 100 years. We talked about blue pike, a fish that used to number in the billions.
Yeah.
Has gone, you know, relatively quick. It took 4 years for them to go extinct.
That's crazy.
So when you talk about this, I think there could be something to that, some of these large serpent-like creatures. Here's one that may surprise you. Lakers. Lake trout.
Okay.
Deep water Goliaths. So the king salmon is the pelagic, you know, the pelagic king.
Yeah.
These are the bottom kings.
Gotcha.
These live from 40 feet to 400 feet, 600 feet, 700 feet. Gosh. These are massive monsters. Now, we know very little about these guys' true maximum size and how old they can live.
Hmm.
We have individuals that are in their 80s and 90s.
That's
they grow
crazy.
Slow because of the cold, deep water they live in.
Right, yeah.
But unlike, they are vicious predators, but unlike most other salmonids, they'll scavenge and they'll eat carcasses.
Okay.
So yeah, they'll pick stuff right off the bottom.
Yeah, I would say most stuff that dies and goes to the bottom.
Yeah, but they also have very sharp teeth and they're very good predators.
Yeah.
So a world record is about 80 pounds.
Okay.
And about 5.5 feet long.
Gosh, that's so big.
But like I said, we estimate they can get much larger than that, maybe put well over 100 pounds.
Gosh.
But they're also deep water guys. So most of the people had seen king salmon. Kings are pretty flat. They get big and long, but they're really flat. These are rotund animals. They are known for being, like, when you get really big ones, they look obese.
Barrel-shaped?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if the head, like, they thought this was an animal's head, and seeing their two giant eyes in the body, and it diving back down. So these guys will get bloat sometimes from eating really large carcasses or meat in meals, and they'll float, and they can't release the gas quick enough.
Yeah, so they're kind of stuck up at the top.
So I kind of wonder if that's what's happening with some of these. You think it's a giant head, and it's actually just a huge lake trout that's swollen.
Right, yeah.
Now, I got three more for you, and they get crazier each time.
Okay. Well, some of them still have yet to fit the descriptions.
Nobody will fit all of them.
Well, not all of them, but the later accounts where they seen the serpentine thing, but where its head was and neck was lifted out of the water.
The last one will.
Okay, okay.
But next, giant eels.
Yeah.
Lake Michigan, the Great Lakes have a history of what appears to be giant eel species. In our giant eel episode, we've talked about that. That eels will go thousands of miles upriver and they'll mature for decades.
Right, yeah.
Until they return back to the ocean.
Yeah.
So these all could be juvenile sea serpents, essentially, where they'll get 20, 30 feet long in our freshwater environments. And then they'll start at that probably size is when they start working their way out.
Getting out of there, yeah.
And we talked about the Ohio horned serpents, the Ohio River horned serpents. Some eels, like congers, will actually have bumps on their heads, which could be these horns.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, none of these creatures really ever did anything to anybody.
Right.
Besides the shark attack in Lake Michigan.
Right, right.
But that, you know, bit a kid in half. That was a shark.
Much different.
Yeah. So eels are very secretive, they can be very curious. They'll go to these areas to feed on stuff like the one that was on the river, scooping up everything. If it was flooding out food, or if there's a, Chicago was known to be one of the beef processing capitals of the world for a very long period of time.
Did not know that.
So these rivers will literally flow giant chunks of meat.
Meat, just waiting.
Guts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're a big scavenger and you don't really care where it's coming from.
Buffet.
It's a buffet. And that could be why so many of your sightings were around the Chicagoland. You were drawing these deep water behemoths into the shallows.
Chumming them to the, chumming them right to you.
Yeah. So there's that thought. What do you think with the giant eels?
I like the giant eels because we know they exist. We know they're out there.
Yeah.
So you can't rule this one out. I bet you that's some of the sightings. This is what's responsible for it.
And here's one I've never brought up before.
All right.
Which is impressive. Freshwater jellyfish swarms.
Oh, okay. Well, we know we got jellyfish in Lake Erie, right?
Yeah, they're in all the Great Lakes.
Okay, they're in all of them. Okay.
So they're actually saltwater jellyfish that once we started bringing ships in, they came in. So they're harmless. They're most of the time, their group, the species they belong to, they don't have stinging cells or they don't have stinging cells that can affect humans. They eat algae. They can be blue or pink is the most two common colors.
Hmm.
And they don't really get bigger than your thumb.
Okay, so they're tiny. But they don't have stingers?
They don't really have stingers that affect people.
Okay, okay, okay.
So on their own, they're not very impressive. In swarms, every once in a while, these guys have been documented into being in tightly packed, 100-foot-long swarms. Mm. And I kind of wonder if that could be some of these giant black serpent sightings. Not the surfaced ones, but when they see the giant black shape going through,
yeah,
it's literally a giant swarm of freshwater jellyfish that only came into the Great Lakes when settlers brought saltwater ships into the Great Lakes.
Oh, so it matches the timeline of sightings. Okay.
So why there was none before is because they weren't there yet.
Right.
Of that type of being.
Right. How the heck do they survive, though, being fresh or saltwater?
They just don't care.
Or they adapt?
They that species can do both.
So androgynous?
Yeah.
Is that what okay.
Yeah. So they can do fresh and saltwater.
Okay.
They just had no way into the Great Lakes.
Gotcha. Okay,
they're
understood.
Not very strong swimmers, right? So you're not going to swim upriver into the Great Lakes.
No. No, you're not. Not if you're a jellyfish. You'll get ripped apart.
Yeah. So if a cargo ship's carrying your zygotes in.
Gotcha.
And dumping ballast water, then you're there.
Yeah.
That's how we got gobies in the Great Lakes and everything like that, was riding ballast water.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because that's a thought. Like I said, it's crazy. My last one is probably where a lot of these big, long neck and head ones come from, and even the giant heads.
Okay.
One we haven't really talked about in a while, but we used to talk about a lot, is the giant turtles of the Great Lakes.
Ooh, okay.
From the Leelanau Lake Monster,
right,
which, keep in mind, is only 2 miles.
Not far.
From Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
To all the Lake Michigan, well, Michigan itself has giant turtle sightings, Indiana, Ohio. All the Great Lakes have giant turtle sightings, including the turtle cults that used to exist.
Turtle cults?
We've talked about it before.
Okay, it's been a while.
We're on one of the islands in Lake Erie where there was kind of like a group that was like worshiping the giant turtles of the lake.
Does Turtle Man run that or no?
No, I think he's the one breaking it up.
Oh, I thought he was one of the ones they worship too. They might.
Maybe.
They probably have
the
a
second
statue.
Deity.
Yeah.
Their version of the Holy Trinity.
Yeah, turtles, Turtle Man, and the lake itself, just water.
No, so we even talked about some of these guys being bioluminescent. We talked about previous Lake Michigan giant turtle sightings, where the guy was describing what he thought was a UFO at first, with the big glowing spots on it, and realized it was a giant turtle shell.
That was glowing, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the head is literally like a giant turtle. Turtles, they yank their heads back.
Yeah, fast.
So that guy that seen the head sitting up there was probably a turtle breathing.
Yeah.
And it didn't dive fast. It just yanked its head back down. What I think a lot of these are probably giant turtles. Some species of turtles can have their heads pretty far above the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the size displacement. You know, their necks are pretty strong. The Leelanau giant, which we think is probably a giant turtle that was described as wood.
Right.
I think these guys, I think Lake Michigan may house a secret species of giant turtle.
Hmm.
They age slow. They grow slow. Because most people, when you think of Lake Michigan, how cold it is,
right,
you don't think they can. But look at the leatherback. We talk about that. They're kind of warm-blooded for turtles. They're super weird for turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Turtles have done this where they have gone to the cold water extremes.
Oh, yeah.
So what if we had a cousin, whether it was the giant softshell turtle of North America or the actual alligator snapping turtle radiated into this new niche with how young the Great Lakes are and became giant cold water behemoths. So there's open water gigantism, and as animals go to colder environments, they get bigger.
Gotcha.
So you already took a 400-pound turtle or a 200-pound turtle, and now you're inducing it to an open water environment that's colder. If that animal's going to adapt, they're just going to get massive.
Yeah.
And grow slower. And turtles already kind of do a good job of that.
Growing
of
slow.
Of pacing themselves in life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of growing slow.
Right, because if they grow too fast, well, don't their shells get all messed up?
Sulcatas can.
Yeah, okay.
Their shells will outgrow their actual bodies.
Yeah.
So with these giant turtles of the Great Lakes, it could explain the feeding behaviors. It could explain a lot of stuff. Like I said, I think all these sightings are probably a good mix.
Yeah. Animals. It's definitely not one thing.
But I think a lot of the long-necked serpentine creatures are probably giant turtles.
That'd be nuts. That would be awesome if it was true.
I think it is.
I mean,
I think you're
making a case.
They may even be using the cavern systems in the lakes.
Right, yeah, to hang out in.
Yeah.
What do turtles do in the winter? Like, let's say a lake freezes over. How do they breathe?
Some turtles don't. They just go into brumation.
So they're underwater and
they just lay in the bottom.
And just, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the big snappers and stuff, too, right?
Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys. Like, there's videos of, like, you can see alligator snappers under ice.
Yeah.
And they just turn off.
Interesting. Okay. I was curious about that.
Because they can metabolize a little bit of oxygen through their skin and stuff like that, but not like a ton.
Right. Yeah.
But when they go into brumation, they pretty much shut off all non-necessary just biological functions.
Go in their shell and don't move.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
Mm. Just wait it out.
A lot of turtles will do that.
Huh. Okay.
Some turtles den where they'll actually like dig a hole in the side of the bank. But they don't have to.
Okay.
So for Lake Michigan, it would make sense. Either a giant amphibian or a giant turtle, because they don't need to necessarily in the winter come up to breathe.
Right, yeah.
They may pick a cave down there. They may pick a mud. They, you know, they may burrow into the side of the bank. And they just turn off for six months.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. Any of these, I can't remember if there's any other sightings took place in the winter.
No.
I don't think so. No. Okay.
Early spring was the earliest we had. Late fall, early spring.
Well, you might be onto something with these turtles here.
I think a good chunk of it is turtles. I think the Great Lakes house giant turtles. The Native Americans talk about giant turtles in these Great Lakes.
I hope they're still there.
I mean, they base some of their calendars off of these giant turtles.
That's true, too. Like
and
the
Chicago
months,
has Turtle Island.
Yeah.
Which was a sacred site for the tribes that lived there.
Mm.
And I've heard mixed stories of why they named it Turtle Island. It may be a basking spot for the Lake Michigan giant turtle.
The giant turtle, yeah. Maybe that's it.
I mean, they base a lot of their creation myths and stuff like that, the creation legends, about the giant turtles.
Okay, gotcha. Well, yeah, don't they say the whole world is on the back of a giant turtle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think? If you had to pick one, who are you going with?
Well, like we said, a lot of these accounts describe different things. You know, it's not one thing as all these. So I think it can be a combo of all these with the turtles, the eels. The bull sharks.
The sharks.
And the sturgeon.
I didn't even mention, there is a small chance an occasional whale made it in.
Really? It could have made it in?
So, for this example, a whale did get into the International Coastway when my family was in Florida.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there's not much room.
Yeah.
It was a fin whale, and it was like a 60-foot whale.
Jeez.
And literally, there was not a lot of space in the locks to get in.
Yeah.
So we had to just, like, be snug underneath one of these ships.
Yeah.
And they drug it out. I'm 100% sure it died.
Yeah.
But they said they released it, you know, got it out alive. But it had been in the sun for, like, a few days.
Ooh.
Because it picked a spot where it was just like, I can barely fit here.
It's got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Man.
And so half the day it was being baked.
That's crazy.
So there is always that chance.
Yeah.
That a whale, yeah, they won't live long. Like, they need the salt water.
Yeah.
They need salt water.
Okay.
So they won't live long
That's
in those
weird.
Environments.
Why do they need it?
Their bodies are completely, so for an animal, it has tons and tons of salt available.
Okay.
Keep in mind, that's where they're getting their water. That's where they live in.
Right.
If they don't have they're not able to regulate salt in their body then.
So they need that water to automatically.
So basically, their body's going to remove all the excess salt.
Gotcha.
When you move into a freshwater environment, you don't have excess salt.
No.
You need that salt.
Right.
Your body's still
trying to get rid of
getting rid of it faster than you're taking it in
right.
at that point.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why most saltwater animals can't handle it. Salmon and eels and stuff like that, they have a little switch.
Okay.
Bull sharks, they actually have what essentially is like a third kidney that turns on and starts retaining recycling salt.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So they will eventually run out of that recyclable salt.
So it's now, it'll last for a while, but it's
it'll last a long, long time, months and sometimes years, it seems. Yeah. But it's not sustainable. If they can get enough salt in their diet plus that system running, they can stay there for a very long time.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, that has been the Lake Michigan monsters.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think it's been one thing.
No, I agree with that.
But I think it's turtles, eels, and the occasional shark.
Turtle, eels, and sharks. Oh, my.
There you go. Maybe that'll be the episode.
Maybe,
name.
Yeah.
I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been Jay Clones. I don't remember.
I don't even remember.
I don't remember. That was like an hour ago.
And we'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
M- Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.